Hey everyone, Michael here with a quick content warning. During our conversation about Moon Knight, Joe and I do talk about themes of physical abuse. If that makes you uncomfortable, then please take good care of yourself before listening. And thank you very much, and on with the episode.
Hello and welcome to Champion Casters, a podcast about heroes and craft where we analyze the motifs and themes behind your favorite film and television heroes, and everything we say is in Comic Sans. I am your host, Joe Tomlin.
And I'm your co-host, other host, Michael Ruiz.
You know, we should really just eliminate saying host at the beginning, because I think that's what always throws the other off. Host designations aside, Michael, I have a question for you.
Always.
Did you enjoy reading the comic book Civil War 2?
I'm so curious as to why you put this here. No. The short answer, no. I don't think profiling is good. You know, the long and short of it is I don't think the profiling is good. And so it's kind of a clear delineation. And I don't think Bendis is the person to write that story.
And it doesn't make sense why Captain Marvel would be the one profiling. After all, Tony Stark is the one who has like all this facial recognition technology going on. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, it's a little strange. Civil War II was odd. I'm going to be frank. I stopped reading halfway through because I got bored, which is fair enough. But the reason why I'm asking you about Civil War II today is because the central premise of that and the thematic weight about that is profiling. That's it, you know, it's police profiling.
Yes.
And the concept in that comic book is that if the heroes could know that the bad guys were going to commit crimes before they did, should they stop the bad guys? And Captain Marvel was like, hell yeah. And Iron Man was like, no. And then it ended, it got to the point where it was even happening to heroes. And so heroes were being arrested and attacked when they didn't do anything and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm bringing it up for today, because Michael, what are we talking about?
We're talking about Moon Knight today. You know, the Disney Plus series that just ended probably about a week ago of this recording. And I think we're going to have some thoughts about this series, and I think it's going to be hard to talk about this series, even just the basic plot of it and the background on it, without giving the quick heads up that we are a spoiler cast. So we're going to be spoiling this series, so please, if you like this show or you're interested in the show, I do think it's worth watching. I don't think all of its ideas it's set out to talk about are accomplished, so to say, but I do think it is at least interesting. So I would give it a thumbs up. I would say for the most part.
Yeah, I'd give it a thumbs up too. There are a lot of different, for lack of a better word, there are a lot of different issues about identity within this. Identity is the best word I could come up with.
Yes.
That occur throughout this series that neither Michael and I are equipped to discuss, least of which dissociative identity disorder, one of the identities I'm referring to. So please, if you know, there are definitely other podcasts out there talking about those particular takes, and there's different writings out there, which I will link in the show notes. But to talk about this, maybe I should give our listeners a brief summary of the show.
Yeah, go for it.
So, Moon Knight is directed by Mohamed Diab, Justin Benson, and Aaron Moorhead. It stars Oscar Isaac, as you all know, Ethan Hawke, Mae Calamway, F. Murray Abraham, Antonia Salib, Saba Murabak, and also Oscar Isaac. So, the plot is that Stephen Grant, played by Oscar Isaac, is a simple gift shop attendee in a museum who struggles with the person he happens to share a body with, known as Mark Spector, who's an international merc for hire, who happens to be hired by the Egyptian deity known as Khonshu, and Khonshu hired him to be his fist of vengeance known as Moon Knight. With a varied perspective, Mark and Stephen both must work together to stop an evil cult leader, played by Ethan Hawke, who's trying to bring back another Egyptian deity known as Ammit. Amit's trying to rise and bring her own sense of justice upon the world, the type of justice that's a little prejudiced. Now, the story fluctuates between our two leading perspectives in abrupt cuts and kind of has a bit of a surrealist approach.
Yes.
So once again, as our caution and warning, we are not the voices for depictions of mental health or Egyptian lore or Jewish heritage. That's all demonstrated within the show. Neither of us can really speak to that, but there are other writers and podcasters who can.
No. And so we're definitely gonna be focusing more on that. And naturally, I think like there's no talk about the show without briefly touching on those ideas. But yeah, we really want to make sure we make it a point to say, to touch upon that specifically, that, you know, please go listen to critics doing that work, because it's definitely out there. Anyway, Joe, so when we're talking about this show, I wanted to just get your vibe on how this show kind of seeks to tell its story, because it does use this surrealist, abrupt sense of cutting constantly. Like, this is its main, like, focalized way of telling the story, that it's going to give you impartial information constantly. And I'm curious, did that ever feel like jarring to you, or did it feel more like you were kind of just waiting for the story to get to the point, so to say?
You know, because I understand the act structure of these Marvel shows, I wasn't too bothered by it. I knew at the end, this is only going to last 6 episodes. Now, if this was a series that I knew was going to be renewed every year and it had like 13 or, God forbid, 23 episodes, like a CW show, I might not be down for that. But because of that, I was okay with it. Yeah. Now, speaking of like this jump cut and perspective and the way in which it uses that to explain or show that this is coming from another character's perspective, or that another character's perspective happened and we just didn't witness it on screen. I was kind of surprised that we spent a good amount of time with Steven for basically an episode and a half of this episode series before really getting introduced to Mark.
Yeah.
Because in the comics, Mark is essentially the main character.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's like part of the how the show is intentionally it's an origin story. Like, that's what this story is. It's purely just, like, if you don't know anything about Moon Knight, you could show someone this and they'd still be able to follow along. And I agree with you for the most part. Maybe as someone who's, you know, I don't read the Moon Knight comics. I've never really touched upon him, but I understand, like, the basic idea. And so as a result, during the first episode, you know, hearing everyone talk about this, because for me, I actually didn't watch it as it was airing. I watched it kind of, like, towards the end. I kind of watched the whole series within, like, a week. And I feel like after watching the first episode, I heard some people be like, whoa, what, you know, what is going on? And I remember watching the first episode and thinking it was pretty straightforward and being like, I was expecting a little bit more, you know, abstraction, so to say. This seems pretty straightforward as to what's happening, even if it's intentionally trying to be jarring at times. And I think it's doing so just because it's trying to, like, start, like, media res, And you know, jump you into the action as it's happening as a means to kind of engage you more. And I think it's all well and good. That's great. But we do spend a lot of time in just like the, what is Stephen Grant doing? What is his whole like day look like? It's kind of like Falcon and Winter Soldier. And we talked about this with the MCU shows before, where like narratively, the first episode is just all like a giant character exercise slash like internal lore, and like really nothing of substance really happens.
Yeah, it's a lot of meandering, and you can become comfortable with that. And I remember when we were first watching these shows, I think you and I both had the opinion of, man, wouldn't it be great if the whole MCU was like this? Where it's just, I'd love to see a day, like, I would love to see an episode of Winter Soldier where it's just Winter Soldier, just Bucky living his day.
Yeah.
But we don't ever get that. We get, like, 5 minutes of that in one episode, and then 5 minutes of that in another episode.
Yeah. it's a little bit like how we both talked about when we saw Shang-Chi. Some of the most interesting character moments, I think, that happen are like the first like 15 minutes of it, right? The first 15 mm-hmm. minutes of like seeing what does his commute to work look like? What is his like job? What does he do at his job with his friend? You know, there's something to be said about having this time to just spend getting to know your hero, so to say, and understanding mm-hmm. them in the space that they exist in. Also, for like in a show that is about like, being uncomfortable with yourself, right? Being uncomfortable with sharing, almost. I think that that's pretty important to also understand, why it is they feel the way they do. And I think, for the way Steven exists in this show, I think that that does a lot to endear him to the audience, so that when he is kind of being more the more frantic side, it makes him not seem like he's being a nag to Mark, so to say, because he begins mm-hmm. as your perspective. He begins as the straight man, so to say, because, the show's going to get so wild later in terms of just like the magic of it, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
And
for sure.
How did you feel towards the end when they started using the abrupt cuts more to flesh out Mark and Steven's perspectives respectively?
You know, I didn't mind the cuts and the way in which it was edited. What I thought was interesting towards the end, when we talk about different levels of surrealism, there is the mental hospital that's all in white that mm-hmm. Mark and Steven are embodying, while we have Ethan Hawke's character acting as the doctor. Jumping mm-hmm. back and forth between that and then Egyptian lore and then what's happening in the real world. Mm-hmm. And then getting further into like, well, there's a heaven and a hell in the Egyptian world. And then on top of that, there's the backstory that Steven remembers. And then there's the backstory that Mark remembers.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of the chicken and the egg question, which is the mystery of who is the quote unquote original. What I found most confusing about it was thematically, what were we trying to get out of the mental hospital allegory? Yeah. I didn't mind I wasn't actually lost jumping back and forth between all of these plots. I just listed out, I think, 7 plots to you or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that I could keep straight, but I didn't understand why we started in the hospital. Do you know why?
I mean, other than obviously the obvious answer that like this show does want to be in conversation with Mark's neurodivergence, and we don't want to kind of hop into that too much, but I do think it's intentionally using that as as the space for it. But it's strange. I think that that's actually to the show's credit that it can balance all 7 of these plot lines, and I weirdly like it a little bit more because these are, if like perhaps the messier parts of this approach, I do like that. I do like that Steven and Mark are interacting a lot more. I like that we are, if the intention is to be a character exercise, so to say, given full platform, I like that Mark and Steven get to bounce off of each other so much, because when they're together, they never blend, right? Like that, I think that's kind of, from what I've heard and what I've read, that's like important to understanding them as both as individuals and also as like just on a pure writing level. It's just fun. Like the show knows how to write them both in a room together. And so I guess when I think about that in relationship to the first 2 episodes where we don't see any of that, it feels like this was the highlight of the show, actually. Of Mark and Steven's dynamic is actually kind of good and funny and charming. And we just don't get that for the first 2 episodes, so to say. Even though I know that it's right. Also trying to, it's trying to introduce Steven, it's trying to introduce Mark, and it's trying to, show the ways in which, they struggle with each other. But also, them converging is the plot of the show. And it feels mm-hmm. weird for, once again, like I said, in a show that's kind of intending to start the story media res, why didn't we begin with this, Why did it take to episode 4 for us to really see them on screen at the same time?
Yeah, I agree. Like the confrontation that happens between the two of them is, in my opinion, my favorite part of the show. And I understand it's like the show was supposed to lead us to this climax where Steven sacrifices himself for Mark, and we were supposed mm-hmm. to feel for that. And then immediately that gets rectified. The drama of that doesn't quite work for me. Because, like you said, like, we don't feel they're like, real. It's not until episodes 3 and 4 that we really feel them acting together.
Yeah.
So I maybe could have done without that plot point from a momentum perspective.
Yeah.
But I guess going back to the question I was trying to ask you, and I don't mean to ask this question in terms of the neurodivergent themes it's presenting, but rather, what is the weight for the overall narrative that those scenes, the scenes between Steven slash Mark with the doctor? Because, like, why have him in the real world also represent him in the mental space that they're in, which is all coded as Moon Knight because everything is white, right?
Yeah, of course.
Like, is there an aspect of judgment that's happening here? Is that something I'm missing?
Yeah, I think so. Like, that's like the soft judgment, right? Like, I do think you kind of get that very unhelpful doctor vibe from Arthur. Arthur as the doctor in those scenes, of just trying to also separate them two when clearly they need to work together, right? Trying to only talk to one at the time, you know, trying to only do whatever. Like, there's something so unhelpful about him. And it just reminds me, and once again, this kind of gets back to my idea that is, this show seems like towards the end, it kind of wanted to be about the dynamic between Steven and Mark. Like, that is the heart of the show. It's between Oscar Isaac and Oscar Isaac. Yes. You know, he is his own screen partner in some ways. I'm sure they had someone else there acting as the body double. But, you know, he is his own screen partner, and it's about them two learning to care and understand each other. That's the heart of the story, in my opinion, at least. At the end of it, you know, that's why that final resolution ends the way it does. You know, that's why it becomes a little bit of like a buddy cop narrative at the end, with them both swapping between their separate powers. And I like that. Like I said, I do like that. I think that that's the show working at its best of showing these, you know, showing both of them on screen at the same time and showing like the ways in which they complement and help and assist each other simultaneously. And also, like, how it informs his relationship with Layla, too, and just, like, oh, how they can both, they both love her, right? They both love her very much, and what that, and how they can both get to the point they want to be with her, through each other's help.
Mm-hmm. It's a fun love triangle.
Yeah, there's a lot in this show about, like, intimacy, too. We can kind of like move on here, that like there's a lot of intimacy on display here and the fear of like bringing people in. And I guess this will tie in a little bit with my other thing, that is like this is a show that I think does intentionally play with violence a lot and like the role in which like violence plays. I'm going to content warning this episode just because you know, this show does play with like physical abuse specifically, and like, that is, you know, I think, admittedly, I think they actually do it pretty tastefully, as in they don't show it on screen, but, like, allow you to know that this is what's happening. This is Mark's trauma, so to say. And I think, at least, there is something kind about the idea of, at the very least, understanding the role in which physical violence takes upon both the victim and the perpetrator, so to say. Because that is also, you know, that's Mark's deal, right? Is he, you know, he has been both a victim and a perpetrator of violence, and how that struggles within himself. And, you know, therefore, like, he struggles to see himself as both. And so it's like, when it comes to the intimacy angle, it is hard to, you know, it's hard to bring someone in if you see yourself as both of these things. And that is, I think that's an interesting place for a show about vigilante justice to be. I don't think it accomplishes all of it, so to say, but I do think it's an interesting idea.
Yeah, this film tries to hold the weight of a lot of different themes and ideas.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't quite land them all, but in terms of its vigilante justice, it's interesting the way in which it kind of differs from the comic books. I'll have a link to that in the show notes, because I don't think I'd be the best person to speak on it. The way in which this show tries to talk about its violence and the way in which violence is perpetuated upon our hero, mm-hmm. And how that hero chooses, or that hero has found different ways to adapt to that violence and respond mm-hmm. to it. I think it's one of the more empathetic portrayals of this type of trope within the MCU.
Yeah.
Another character I think that's akin to this would be probably Wanda. Go listen to our Doctor Strange or Wanda episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I find Mark and Steven to complement each other really well.
You know, in superhero stories, we have the, like, you know, how many times are we going to have the story about whether or not, you know, X hero is going to kill, so to say, as if, like, killing mm-hmm. is the penultimate, it's the one line you won't cross, right? It's, you can't do mm-hmm. X. And that's, you know, I'm not, once again, no one's advocating for murder, so to say, but that's also how we end up in stories where Batman will, like, break every single bone in someone's body and be like, oh, I didn't break my rule, though. Like, mm-hmm. or he'll, like, you know, he'll do whatever. You know, go watch that Batman trailer. Like, he'll do whatever, but I didn't kill him. I didn't kill him. And it feels like, you know, it feels like you're doing the whole, like, workaround thing. Or, you know, spoilers for Arkham Origins. That game's not very good, so I'm just going to say it. When he fights Bane and he has to kill him, so to say, and all he does is stop his heart, then, you know, resuscitate him. It's like, perhaps we're getting lost on the theme that writers, in my opinion, I think, seem to be coming back to is, once again, the role that violence takes on a person. Like, that the being the fist of this, being the person enacting it. And I think that that's why, and because we know Steven from the beginning of the show, during the moments where Mark is fighting people and Steven's like asking him like, hey man, like, no, stop this, like, you know, stop hurting people, it feels more earned just because it's not about just murder. It's not like, you know, we're qualifying everything. It's, hey, stop. Like, you know, you don't have to do this, really. And I think that, mm-hmm. that does a lot to understand that it's more than just this, like, X thing, which we can have all kinds of caveats for. It is, no, you know, doing this act at all is, you know, is harmful to you, and you should not do this, so to say. You don't want to do this, you know, as we see that even when his, you know, they enter his room and they see all the dead bodies. You know, Mark even admits to himself and says that moment, like, you know, you try killing someone and, you know, try to forget about it. You know, it really does a lot. And I like that in that room, there's a lot of people, but there's not that many people. It's not like they're entering an auditorium where it becomes almost impossible for the audience to recognize every individual in that room. Instead, making it more like a few tables, I think, does a lot to understand, like, oh no, he can remember each of these faces. He can remember these all individuals. And also the audience can perceive them all in that state as well. And I think that mm-hmm. does more than just, you know, be like, oh, you know, my kill count. You know, it's a little bit more than even like Killmonger's moment where, you know, he has a little notch on all his body, you know, just because it's not tangible in the same way. And I think that, once again, I think that that's credit to Mark and Steven's dynamic specifically to creating that intimacy and creating that understanding of, like, violence as not a good thing.
Yeah. When one commits violence, that violence is, it's likely because violence has been committed upon them, whether that's physical or mental.
And that's the show in a nutshell.
Steven and Mark experienced that from their mother as a kid, both the mental and the physical.
Mm-hmm.
But on top of that, we also have Khonshu as another act of that mental violence and abuse that's haunting them constantly.
Yeah.
Khonshu's a dick.
Yeah.
Khonshu is a bad partner. That keeps you, you know, a bad abusive partner that just keeps you in, trapped in that apartment and mm-hmm. it continues to hurt you. And, but it's like, you can't leave. And unfortunately, you know, Steven and Mark have to partner back with Khonshu at the end, but mm-hmm. do it on their terms.
Yeah.
When you're in a type of relationship where someone in the past has hurt you, but they're such an integral part of your life that you have to continue to interact with them. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, setting up those boundaries is necessary.
Yeah. Right?
Granted, I wouldn't recommend doing that with an Egyptian god, but mm-hmm. for the sake of this film, for the sake of this plot, I think it's a nice little message.
I agree. I was kind of wondering the entire time, is Khonshu going to have a moment where he becomes more of a like a Venom style character, where they kind of embrace the more goofier side of his like very kind of like straight-laced approach to justice, so to say. And just because I feel like, especially during the second episode where he's like, you know, yelling at Steven while he's talking to Arthur, like, you know, I'm justice, you know, like I like he feels like he's being the heel there. And I was waiting, I was wondering if at one point they were going to make him more likable, but I kind of agree with you. I kind of like that they didn't. I like that Khonshu never really gets to be the symbiote in that way, because he just gets to be seen as like kind of the wrathful jerk that he is. And also the voice for, Mark and Steven to both keep doing what they don't want to do. And I think that like having that like unhealthy relationship and like relationship to yourself is connect to this, what this whole series seems to be about. And I think that it makes Khonshu the right level of unlikable, so to say.
Right. With Venom, the symbiote is supposed to be a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
Venom and Eddie Brock actually complement each other in a way and they work better together. That's why the goofiness kind of works.
Yeah.
In that relationship. Otherwise, Venom is a parasite.
Yeah.
Which is funny because that's often the way in which Venom is portrayed in relationship to Peter Parker.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why Eddie gets to be cool with Venom, but not Peter. But anyway, I think, yeah, the Khonshu should be a problem for the type of narrative that they're telling here. And he stays a problem all the way up to basically being the setup villain for the next season, along with their other personality, Jack, who, by the way, loves committing violence.
Like, that's his thing. That's all we know about him, right? Yeah, it's... I'm curious as to how that second season would go, right? And that's why, like, I come back to this show. I'm like, you know, like I said, I don't think it lands all of the things it seems to be setting out to do. You know, there's also a lot of other plot lines. I sadly think Layla doesn't get a whole lot of attention for as long as she's on screen. She's kind of, like, just delegated to being the advocate for both Mark and Steven, respectively. And so it's like, I like this character. I want to see more, but it does seem like once again the show wants to be about Mark and Steven and their relationship. So as a result, it also makes sense to set up the villain as Khonshu, who has been if an anti-hero, so to say, this entire time, also still like a villain. I think that puts them in a really interesting spot for season two. Who knows what that means for the rest? Who knows what that means for Moon Knight cameos in the future? But I would watch season two of this, especially because it's only 6 episodes. That's short.
That is short. Yeah, I would definitely watch season two of Moon Knight.
Oscar Isaac's maybe a little too expensive for them.
Maybe. I don't know. He seems really down to do this cape stuff and this genre fiction stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, he was in Ex Machina. He dressed as Apocalypse for X-Men Apocalypse, if you remember that. And then he's also in Dune.
Yeah. Oh, you're right.
And Star Wars.
Yeah.
He's down for this nerd shit.
Yeah. Yeah, but he doesn't want to do Star Wars anymore. He truly went up the Harrison Ford alley of being like, why don't they just kill him?
He did, yes.
No, shout out. And I agree. We're going to get Mark and Steven in a bit. But I do think that, yeah, shout out to Oscar Isaac just as a whole for having to show off a lot of range, because he's playing two different characters. I'm sorry, he's playing three different characters. One's not on screen for a whole long. But, you know, he has to play two whole characters that have full dimensions and agency in their own right. And that is difficult. Least of which, because I imagine at some points, he's probably just acting by himself, right?
Yes.
Yeah, even if they have another person there, he's still the one having to carry the performance, because he's going to be what's in the final cut. Yeah.
Imagine going through makeup. Just going through makeup that often. And wardrobe.
And having,
because it changes hair.
Yeah.
To differentiate between the two.
It's like one of the best little bit of bits between them, right? Is that like there's a lot of good subtle changes between Mark and Steven to let you always know who's on screen. Like from his hair to even just like, of course, like his body language. To obviously the voice, like, you know, it's all Oscar's performance, all that really good stuff. But before we kind of hop into that, Joe, we got to hop somewhere else for a little bit.
Are we going to go to the alternate reality of trivia?
We are going to go to the alternate reality of trivia. And we're back. Hello, everyone. We're back to the Trivia Corner. Joe and I quiz each other this whole season. Who's going to get more points from questions correct? And whoever has less points at the end of the season is going to get to subject the other one to a Hot One-style questionnaire, where the loser will have to eat increasingly hot wings while the other one grills them about their favorite episodes this season. And so, Joe, I've got some questions for you. Somewhat related to Moon Knight, somewhat related to Oscar Isaac. And so, Joe, little known, double alias of Oscar Isaac himself, is he was in a band called The Blinking Underdogs, who even opened for Green Day at one point.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Do you know what instrument or instruments he played? What role was he in the band?
Well, it was a ska band, right?
It was a ska band, yeah.
Yeah. Man, did he play one of the horns? Did he play one of the trumpets in a ska band? That'd be great. I'm gonna guess guitar.
Yeah, it was guitar. You could also have said vocalist, because he was also a vocalist as well. But yeah, guitar was his instrument. Yeah, I was like, hey, good job, man. I would have almost given you a point just for knowing it was a ska band, because I almost made that the question.
History, Michael.
Oh my god. Anyway, Joe, do you know why the Moon Knight wears white?
Because he's related to the moon?
No. Think edgier.
So you could see the blood on him?
You know, I'll give you half a point for that, because it's so you can see him. It's so his enemies know he's coming.
Oh, okay.
And so he is omnipresent. He is always there. He's the defender of travelers of the night. And I thought that was interesting, given our next question, which is my low-hanging fruit for you. Because which DC hero is commonly compared to Moon Knight? And that this show even kind of went out of its way to address?
Yeah, Batman.
It is Batman, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people pitched him as Batman, even though he really isn't.
Like, especially not.
No, he's not Batman. People just like the idea of, like, a vigilante who goes at night and punches people a lot, and they think it's Batman.
It's like, that's also, like, bro, that's, like, how many superheroes?
You could say Daredevil's like Batman, Batman is like Batman.
Yeah, you can see Batman.
Except Batman's like Batman.
You could.
No, because a lot of the edgy aspects of Batman that we know of today came from Frank Miller's run, which Frank Miller just took what he did with Daredevil and put it on Batman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what if, right?
Yeah.
What if I just copy and pasted my own work? It's not plagiarism if it's me. Well, those are all my questions, Joe. How about you?
My first question for you, Michael, is which Shakespeare performance did Oscar Isaac appear in? Now, this isn't a play. Film. No, it's just a play. Actors do Shakespeare all the time.
Oh, right? Of course. I was like, I would be surprised if he didn't do several. But if this is a particularly popular one, I'm gonna guess Macbeth.
That's not the information I have, but I wouldn't be surprised if he did Macbeth at one point.
Of course. What you got?
I'll give you another go.
Oh, okay. Hamlet?
Okay. No. It is Romeo and Juliet. He did Shakespeare part of Romeo and Juliet.
Mm-hmm. Damn. Who was he?
I don't fucking know. I know I'm a trivia guy and I should have the answer, but all I know is that he was in Romeo and Juliet.
Okay, then if I'm casting Oscar Isaac to be one of the characters, do you make him Romeo? Romeo is such a boring lead in so many ways. Do you make him Tybalt? He dies then.
Yeah, but with Romeo, he has to be hot, and just like in the movie, you have to see his ass. So
that's a good point.
This is.
Do you remember when we watched that really old one, the one like made in the 60s? And like, yeah. did your, this is a complete side tangent, but did our ninth grade teacher, I guess we probably shouldn't say on air, also put up like a little like paper or something to block Romeo's butt from being on screen?
Oh no, we saw it all.
Oh, okay. Same.
What paper? You put it on a projector. You're still going to see the butt. It's just going to be, now you have a butt with a
smear,
the square. Yeah. No, we saw Romeo's butt.
I remember specifically the because he's standing in front of the window when he's naked, and yep. I remember the whole class was laughing, and my teacher said, he's like, I don't know why you're all laughing. Verona's getting the best sight of all because he's just
wow.
Anyway, your questions, Joe.
Your high school teacher said that. Interesting.
Yes.
I don't think we had the same high school teacher.
No.
High school English teacher. So my second question for you is, which actor's real facial hair did Oscar Isaac wear in Dune?
Like he wore another actor's facial hair?
Yes, that second actor's facial hair was buzzed off and turned into a beard for him to use.
Oh my god. Jason Momoa?
That's a good guess. It was actually Josh Brolin.
It was Josh Brolin's that was my beard. Second one. Damn.
Yeah.
Really?
Josh Brolin. Yeah, they shaved Josh Brolin's beard and just put it on Oscar Isaac.
Excuse me?
Dune, this movie that won like 6 Academy Awards for its production. All they did was shave another man's beard. I thought it looked a little odd. I thought it was interesting, the coloring of it. But I was like, well, you know, whatever. We're in a sci-fi world. I don't care.
Yeah.
He can have whatever beard he wants.
Also, Oscar Isaac can grow a beard. Like,
yeah.
What? Anyway.
So Oscar Isaac was notoriously expelled in grade school. Which grade was it?
Wait, you said grade school as in like elementary? Or just like you're talking about K-12?
K-12.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, it was in high school, right? I think it was, wasn't it 11th?
No, it was actually middle school, 7th grade.
Oh, I was wrong. 7th grade?
He was expelled for being too much of a disruption in class.
Damn. Joe, how does it feel to relate?
I know. You weren't a
disruptive force. You were just the first to raise your hand.
Yeah, I was the fucking nerd. I always thought I knew everything. Even when I didn't. And I still do to this day. Hell, I have a podcast for it.
That's what happens to all the kids who raise their hand in class. They just started podcasting. Oh, boy. Well, shit. Damn. I'm sorry, Oscar Isaac. I think I whiffed that whole section. I didn't know your beard would be taken from Josh Brolin. Well, anyway, speaking of Oscar Isaac, we know we love him here. We're big fans. Let's talk about Steven Grant and Mark Spector specifically, just because they are the two highlights of this show. And I want to begin this with a sentiment that I've heard several people voice. I think the person most notably was the Cosmonaut Variety Hour, Marcus. He said that Mark Spector and Steven Grant get to be like the real highlights of the show. And that is not always true with superhero stuff. Every now and then with our genre fiction, we were talking about Han Solo off the table last, or like before off mic just now. And we were talking about Doctor Strange literally last week, where the main characters are not always the highlight. It's the side characters, because they're put in more interesting relationships to each other. But weirdly, here, I think Mark Spector and Steven Grant never end up feeling like, you know, even though I was jokingly calling Steven Grant the straight man of their dynamic, there's times where they both get to be like the joking one, and the other one gets to be the serious one. And as a result, It makes their like kind of buddy cop format work a lot more, because it never feels like a shtick. They genuinely do feel like two characters. And I think that I'm just so surprised that like our perspective character here is the most interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it does a lot for the show to make me really end up liking both of them as they exist. And I think that we kind of touched upon this a little bit already, but like why in those later episodes they feel like such a highlight. But I guess to zoom in on them specifically, what's your take on Steven? Did you like the Steven-centric moments that he existed in? Did you like his Nightwing Screamastick style approach to fighting? What you got? What's your gut feeling?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because I believe the Mr. Knight persona with the mask and the suit is supposed to be a different type of character in the comic books. I'm not super familiar with Moon Knight comics. I only read part of one run one time. I enjoy Stephen Grant. I think he's perfectly amiable. I think knowing Stephen Grant is actually partly inspired by a show that Mark was watching when he was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And this this idea of being this idea of passivity, mm-hmm. being a response to aggression.
Mm-hmm.
I think that aspect of Steven is really interesting.
Yeah.
I like that he gets to show his power and use Khonshu's abilities to a more inventive way.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't go out with flat out aggression. He's kind of fumbling his way forward into the fight.
Yeah.
He happens to be able to take punches harder than he can, and because of that, he rolls the right way, and then his opponent is incapacitated.
Yeah, it's worth noting, I think in the comics, there's supposed to be 10 different perspectives that really, that Moon Knight shifts between. Of course, Stephen Grant and Mark Spector seem to be the primary ones, but I think even more so, I think you're absolutely right that the show, some of the coolest, like, I think special effects moments in the show are during that star chart scene, right? During the moment where they're literally moving the sky. And that shit was mm-hmm. sick. That shit was awesome. I love that. I was like, what a cool demonstration of power for a pretty like tangible need to kind of move the plot forward. It also makes sense for Steven to want to utilize the power in this way. It still feels like you have this, you know, kind of overwhelming sense of like cosmic ability. I was like, whoa, this is sick. Like, why don't we get, I wish we had, you know, like the VFX. For what, you know, for many reasons, like as cool as it is to see, you know, characters shoot beams out of their hands or do whatever, this is a really like environmental approach to powers and abilities that I just remember thinking was really interesting and also like makes sense for Steven specifically to imagine his powers in new ways, to not just be like a punchy boy. And maybe it's because some of the, I maybe you disagree with this, but like, did you think the action in this series was a little bit mid?
Huh, it's funny that you say that. I watched another movie recently.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't a movie. This is a show we're talking about. But the movie I watched recently, The Lost City.
Mm-hmm.
The rom-com starring Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum.
Mm-hmm.
Set in a jungle.
Yeah.
I thought that film actually had really great action.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in a rom-com, you don't expect action scenes to be blocked out really well and to be somewhat creative, but they were in that film. And comparing mm-hmm. that to this, I think some of the action scenes are mid in this because you don't see them. We get the cut between, we use the editing that we talked about earlier in the episode to say, hey, another character took care of the action in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Little do we know, some of those times it was actually Jake. Mm-hmm. The hyper-aggressive personality.
Yeah.
I think when the action does occur, I'm thinking right now, the biggest thing I'm thinking of is when they're going to the mummy. We're going to the first mummy's sarcophagus to then retrieve the information to then get to the star chart. I think about the action with Moon Knight and the men on horses.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was okay. When Mark Spector is in the Moon Knight costume, that's when I expect the extremistics. That's when I expect to see the not batarangs, the Moon Knight boomerangs,
mm-hmm.
Other moon themed gadgets.
Yeah.
But instead, they mostly use the physicality to show Mark taking hits.
Yeah.
Our heroes take a lot of hits. And what that does is it builds tension, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is commonly what's used in the Captain America movies to make Captain America feel like an underdog. He takes a lot of hits and then he kicks his way to victory. But, you know, sometimes Steven and Mark don't win. You know, they need to be bailed out.
Yeah.
And I think that can be, I guess, kind of frustrating because this show is more interested in the interpersonal dynamic between them two than say the external forces they're fighting.
Absolutely. I kind of completely agree. And this is kind of like why I part of me, like, I understand this is an MCU show. You kind of need to end with a giant punching battle. But I was like, you know, weirdly in a show, it seems like there probably shouldn't be any fight scenes in this show, right? Like, the idea that it cuts them all out as, like, a means to once again talk about, like, how violence is this not only a consistently unhealthy thing for them, but also, like, this thing that's, like, played such an unhealthy role for them in the past. I thought that was really good at times, and especially in those first two episodes, to understand that, like, oh, that's not what this show is about. But also, we can still really have cool demonstrations of power, like with the Star Chart scene. And so I think specifically in that scene you're talking about with the horses, when they're fighting that, like, dude, I don't even remember his name, in the red robe. I just remember thinking, like, this is, like I said, it's kind of mid. Like, it's fine. It's not bad action. It's just kind of whatever. It's just kind of like watching a very, like, pretty standard fight scene, which is, like, he throws some things, he takes punches. I guess when he was getting impaled, I was thinking, like, okay, so, like, what's your limit? You know, like, you know, what's your like, if you can take all this pain, what is like Moon Knight's limit, so to say? Because I think the thing with Captain America that they do, and it's because he's a franchise character, so perhaps it's a little unfair, is that, like, I think there are moments where Captain America doesn't get to be ahead. I think specifically, like, this is not a great movie, but I think that this is a pretty good moment in it when he fights Ultron by himself. He's kind of getting his ass beat a little bit. You know, he can't take Ultron by himself, but he can do his best to kind of defend against it, kind of stall for time for the rest of the team. I think that's Captain America working at his best. But weirdly, I guess I never got the sense of, like, what Moon Knight's weakness was or his like, limit was. And like, you know, to kind of earn that notion of, like, oh, hey, this person's pushing themselves. They're rolling with the punches. You know, like, clearly he's superhuman in some capacity, but, like, I guess at some point he doesn't, he's like, he can't take anymore, you know? And so I guess I had a hard time, you know, following the action in that sense, because it's like, it's hard to know where the tension lies, so to say, because if he could just tank a whole spear in his chest, it's like, you know, where's your breaking point?
Right. And I am... Yeah, the tension at the end of the day is lying between Steven and Mark. Speaking of Mark, we haven't really talked about him yet. So what do you think of our mercenary trying his best with his divorce?
Yeah, there are times where Mark feels like he's just a dude. You know, he's like a he feels like he's just like the most guy you could imagine. He literally has the most dude guy thing of like, hey, bro, I struggle with intimacy. You know, like, I struggle to let people in because I feel like I hurt people. Now, of course, that's, like, I think later earned by, like, you know, you getting into his backstory and seeing, like, his complicated relationship with it. But once again, there's still four episodes before that you see him just be like, dude, I'm the most, like, just, like, man character
you
could think of.
Let me make the punches. I can do the punches. Steve, just let me punch people.
Yeah, I'm trying to save my girl, bro, you know, like.
But don't tell her about your feelings. And I'm not going to tell her about mine. And don't you dare tell her about mine.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like the intimacy of, like, you know, once again, like, everyone can struggle with intimacy. I get it. Like, you know, being emotionally vulnerable is a very real thing. You know, it's a very real problem for a lot of cis men out there. That being said, seeing it, like, pretty, it's not shallowly done. It's just kind of, it feels like it is not meaningful up until the fifth episode, where we finally get the understanding of it, so to say. And that feels like a little too late in the show, where he has just been doing the other thing the entire time, and that it's just kind of like a very simple take on this, like, very mask character. And I don't know, I thought he was fine. You know, I do think that, like, when he starts endearing himself to Steven is when he starts working better, because I think, like, it weirdly reminds me of the kindness of, like, hey, I'm going to acknowledge what's good about you, because on some level, this is what literally Mark has to realize at the end of it, like, he loves Steven very dearly, and he holds him very close, And so that level of intimacy between them, I wish I got a little bit more of that. You know, I wish I got a little bit more of him treating Steven like someone who, like, I love you. And that, we kind of fundamentally disagree with each other, but I kind of love you, so I'm going to, I'm going to let you do what you do. And I wish we got to see a little bit more of him kind of advocating for Steven in some ways, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's hard not to have, like, kind of a big brother, little brother kind of vibe with them, where it's right. Like, you know, one is trying to take responsibility for most things, and the other one's inquisitive and very unsure. You know, that's what's a very simple dynamic, but I think it does work a lot when Mark in the later parts of the series is like, it's kind of breaking down, like, I'm truly lost without you. I don't know where I would be if I didn't have you here. And that to me, once again, that is the heart of this show. And that's the part I really liked. And it feels like a shame. We still didn't get that for the bulk of it.
Yeah. Anyway, Sonic, you should be taking notes. this is how you write a big sibling, little sibling.
I think Sonic that's shouldn't... in that movie. Fuck you.
This is a little sibling I could get down with. Steven Grant.
That's just because your little sibling is also, I don't think, Casey's not as passive as this, but he is very inquisitive. Casey, hi, if you're listening. you know, Casey's very academic, very smart, very capable in this way, knows lots of things. And so, you know, I wonder what you're latching onto here.
Just write him smart. That's all I'm saying. Little siblings don't have to be stupid. Make them smart.
I agree. It's just in showing that, like, they help each other, right? They truly uplift each other because they both fundamentally understand and love and care for each other. And that's just what I like to see. You know, I want to see Oscar Isaac hug each other as they both walk into the light at the end. That's really what I'm here for. And that's also, from what I understand about Moon Knight, that is the point of that story. You know, it is about someone kind of finding peace with himself and make the answer that works for him. And I think that, like, you know, in tying together some of the, like I said, some of the stuff that I've read, it's just like that seems to be what people like about Moon Knight. And so, yeah, I think that once again, that when that happens, I think that's the show working at its best. And it's the thing I like about it the most. But yeah, I guess I haven't asked you specifically. What do you think about Mark?
What do I think about Mark? You know, I can't help but think about Mark from the perspective of the pain and trauma that he experienced mm-hmm. as a child. You know, feeling guilt over the loss of his younger brother, which is funny that he creates this younger brother type dynamic with Steve, right?
Yeah, I think it's intentional, right?
Yeah, that's intentional. It's not funny. It's curious. His relationship with his mom specifically, you know, when we look at our typical superhero, and we look at, like, what their origin story is, it's never that their parents are the ones that hurt them. Mm-hmm. It's normally, like, their parents are out of the picture. Yeah. Or something else hurt them. In the comics, this actually isn't his origin story. They changed mm-hmm. it for the show. Mm-hmm. And while I think the comics... I think the comic origin is really valid, and I think that there is absolutely a need for that. For that particular voice and perspective. Once again, I'm going to link that in the show notes. But I think this, the way in which they chose to write this narrative is unique and effective.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when we look at characters like Spider-Man or Batman, mm-hmm. we don't really think of them in essence as someone overcoming their trauma. Their personal mm-hmm. trauma. Like, sure, Batman's, like, punching criminals because his parents died. But when I say it like that, the joke, the inherent, like, humor that's coming from that shows, like, the lack of weight that comes from that backstory. But here, with Mark, I feel the weight of that.
Yeah.
And that is impressive in and of itself for this show and for Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I think Marvel tried to incorporate that with Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. No spoilers for that if you haven't seen it. Go listen to our episode on it. I think they tried to do that as well. It's just kind of jarring when you think about them trying to incorporate this trauma narrative over the course of many different mediums, film and television, right? The last time I think they handled this relatively okay, in my recent memory, right now, is probably Iron Man 3. So while Mark can come across as a dude bro when he's interacting with Steven in the first couple episodes, it's not until our final episode where I really understand Mark as a character and appreciate him.
Yeah, definitely.
And I want to give him a hug.
Yeah. Yeah, poor man's been through a lot, and I think that, yeah, I agree with you, and that's why, like, I wouldn't call it shallow if just a little bit of, like, maybe the show spins its wheels a little bit too much before we kind of get to the interesting stuff, so to say. But, of course, that comes with the nature of it being an origin story, like, you know, you have to really, you know, some people are going to come at this with no knowledge of it, and, you know, maybe it's, like, a little unfair, because, you know, even though we aren't, you know, huge, we're not, like, big Moon Knight comic readers, we still have a small understanding of who this character is. Because I agree with you. I think that that's kind of what we're talking about here with Mark specifically, is that, like, the complexity is there. The understanding is there. It's just not, made apparent or characterized, so to say, towards the end. And if perhaps it looks better on a repeat viewing, it still feels like a little bit missed towards the end. Because yeah, it's strange that you said Iron Man 3, because I think for as messy as that movie is, I think I agree with you that, you know, Iron Man 3 does feel like it was one of the movies that really tried to focalize on Tony in a very real way. In ways that, like, you know, Iron Man 2 was so clearly trying to set up, like, Avengers, right? You know, Iron Man 3 definitely felt like a character movie in ways that even, like, a movie that I liked at the time, like Civil War, Captain America 3, that's not a character movie. It, like, he has character moments in there, but that is, it's Avengers 4. Or, I'm sorry, Avengers, it's Avengers 3.
2.5.
Yeah. Yeah, it stars the whole cast. You know, it's not just about Captain America, even if it's called that. And we're kind of getting to time here, so we should probably start giving to our wrap-up thoughts here, Joe, about Moon Knight as a whole. So what do you think is your takeaway from Moon Knight? What do you think is your takeaway with Steven and Mark? And what do you think kind of you hope they go with this story in the future? Can you see this? Can you see Moon Knight in the MCU as a whole?
Oh, I'm going to address that question first.
Yeah.
I really can't.
Yeah.
I really don't see Moon Knight in the MCU. I can see Moon Knight interacting with Daredevil and that universe. Funny enough, the day of this recording, it was announced that they're going to start a new Daredevil show. And I think I could see that, a more grounded, a more personal universe. But, like, Moon Knight, like, trying to be jokey with Loki or something, I don't know if I can handle that, man.
Just doesn't feel right.
No, because, like, I actually care about this. I care about Steven and Mark. By the way, they both get the champion belt. You know, Steven's a great younger brother, and Mark is a perfectly traumatized older brother. So, I mean, Steven's traumatized as well, but that's different. That's neither here nor there. But yeah. they both get the champion belt. And I think as a show, the show has a pacing problem, and I think it's endemic to the MCU as a whole. I don't know why they had this mandate on 6 episodes, and I don't know why they so desperately want to make a movie out of a show. Just make it like television, for fuck's sake. I don't get it. Like, yeah. The closest thing we had to, like, television was the first half of WandaVision, and then maybe Loki.
Yeah.
But this is getting grating. You know, these characters, if you really want to have these characters feel fleshed out and fulfilled and have a story that feels cohesive, just give it more time.
Yeah.
And there doesn't need to be a big fight scene at the end. My complaints with this show are the complaints that you could have with any other MCU show. So on the whole, pretty positive.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that, like, perhaps the words were struggling with the entire time is just that when we say something is kind of written for TV versus written for the MCU, like they kind of write it, is that, you know, it does feel like a whole movie, especially after watching Daredevil right now, watching season one of, like, all those episodes feel like every single one is like a comic book, is its own internal story with its own climax, its own falling action, its own everything. Versus this one is trying to replicate the plot structure of a movie just spread out over six episodes. It's like, nah, give me that serialized approach to storytelling, and that's what I like a lot more. You know, give me little tiny peaks until we get to the finale. And we don't really get that here. We kind of once again get another version of, you know, a story that's just told over the course of, you know, 6 45-minute installments with one climax. And I agree with you that, like, I don't want the Moon Knight in the MCU either, kind of. I like him as his own standalone thing. And so as a result, maybe that means they could do more fun stuff. Like, as you said, not end it in a giant fight scene. You know, maybe make it a little more character-driven, because that, to me, just seems like the more interesting stuff this show has going for it. But that's just me. You know, I also have a stomach for the approach of just, like, watching a character kind of do plot, like, do nothing in regards to the plot, but I get an understanding of who they are. You know, I'm just in the pocket for that, but, you know, that's just me. They both get the belt, in my opinion. Why would I say no? Khonshu doesn't, but they both get the belt. And yeah, I'd give it a solid 7 out of 10 one fin fishes.
I'm going to give it 9 out of 13 floating scarabs.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Actually, for those keeping score at home, Joe, where are we at right now?
So I got into the lead a little bit after the end of this episode.
Hey, look at that, everyone.
I'm at 29 and Michael is at 27. Michael is so excited to lose and eat spicy hot wings. Michael, you do realize you're going to have to pay for all the hot sauces, right?
I would love to. I just want to eat hot food. And now my goal is just to tie us. So I'm really going to be on my trivia game these next few episodes.
Well, best of luck to you. After this episode, it looks like trivia might not be your forte. But mm-hmm. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, until then, everyone, thank you all very much for listening. And just in the meantime, make sure to watch out for any Egyptian deities just happening to offer you a deal in the middle of the night.
Don't take it. Don't take it. The deal.
And we will talk to you next week, everyone. Bye. All right, thank you for listening to another episode of Champion Casters.
You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
And if you want to keep the conversation going, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at champion_cast.
You can also email us any of your thoughts or questions at championcasters@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
We'd like to give thanks to the following: Shan Theobald for our logo artwork,
Adam Renroe for our intro and outro music,
Joseph Tomlin for managing our social media,
and Michael Ruiz for editing our episodes.
And I have been your host, Michael Ruiz. You can find me at twitter.com at next_entry, and the video essays I write on my YouTube channel, Next Entry.
I have also been your host, Joseph Tomlin. You can find me at twitter.com and Instagram at Joke Tomlin. That is JOUKTOMLIN.
Thanks again for listening, everyone.